Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
So, Akiva, this probably falls under one of our Thursday conversations, but I've been thinking a lot about grit. There's a great book by Angela Duckworth called Grit, and one of the things that she talks about is the importance of, I'm going to use the word again, grit, right? The importance of having some challenges in one's life that you overcome in order to be able to know when you get to larger challenges that you're capable of overcoming them. And having spent significant time thinking about this recently and looking at my students and my own children, I'm wondering if, right, the term snowplow parents, which has become popular recently, has begun to explain why parents may not have allowed their children to build up resilience and grit. Essentially that by resolving all of the problems that their children have for them, the child has never learned how to approach a problem, how to attack that problem, and how to resolve that problem. And so when you start with small problems, and then you're able to figure them out, you can then apply some of the strategies you learned to larger problems. But if you've never had to resolve those small problems, you sort of get stymied, and you take things for granted, and you become pretty helpless. And I'm seeing that to a certain extent among my students. I'm trying to avoid that among my own children. And I'm thinking it's a worthwhile conversation for us to talk about. So give us a little bit about your take on grit.
It probably falls in one of those many, many categories that we have where if we consider a pendulum and the pendulum never stops in the middle, but it moves from one extreme to another. For those physics people out there, obviously that's negating gravity. But the reality that we have this, and I think this idea of developing grit or resilience, as we may call it, is something that's swung back and forth, and we have yet to do it right. So if we, and I had a supervisor, a child psychiatrist, he had many, many different theories, some of which I glom onto more than others, but one of the things that he talked about was how you had this generation, right, of...
I have a feeling you're about to call me a cranky old man, Akiva.
No, not at all, not at all. Okay. We had this generation from the, I believe it was the greatest generation, who got back from World War I and II. I know those were probably two different, but I don't think we called the generations anything before the greatest generation. They kind of took that name, snatched it up right away. But so we have this generation that came up, and what did they tell? They told to essentially the baby boomers, yeah, you need to do what you need to do. You need to work. And occasionally they may have said, you know what, you're too dumb for school. Maybe it's time to go get a job. And so how did many of the baby boomers respond? The pendulum swung the other direction. They looked at their children. They said, you can be anything you want to be. You could be president. You could be an astronaut. You could be whatever. Even if that child had zero aptitude in any of those necessary skill sets, they would still encourage. And that doesn't work so well. And so then we have the shift back, right? We have this back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And obviously it's not my theory, and I'm therefore leaving out some important details. But at the end of the day, the fact is that, yes, I think that we still have not found a happy medium. And the reason why that happy medium is so important is because people don't... We have both sides going on right now. We have people who say, oh, your child needs to be able to handle anything, period. And then we have the opposite, where the child is not meant to handle anything. Neither one of those is correct. Neither one of those is a fair expectation of what your child should be able to handle. You know, they have the, well, we don't want your kid to struggle. That's a common... it's commonly brought up in one of the elementary schools that I've had dealings with. And really, you don't want the child to struggle? The struggle is how we grow. If we're not toiling over something, if we're not struggling to achieve and to succeed, if we're comfortable, we don't grow. And so you have to struggle. You have to have a difficult time, because otherwise there's no push, there's no drive. And I have the another example where, in fact, sometimes there's schools even rewarding this. I was working with someone today who was given a great honor by the school, but never shows up to class. Well, maybe one of the criteria for making it into that particular society is attendance, because I feel like that's an important factor of what must happen. And right, we make that very easy. I think I mentioned to you, Avi, before, not on one of the podcasts, but I drove down to Miami to give a lecture at 8 o'clock in the morning to the second-year medical students, and 10 students showed up to the lecture. That was it, 10. They recorded it. So, being that I'm...
10 out of how many?
I don't know exactly how big the class is, but I think it's a safe estimate that the medical school probably has around 120 students. In each class. This is a rough average medical school size for a public university. So, yeah, not a high percentage. And I woke up really early to get there at 8 o'clock in Miami. I don't know if you're familiar with the traffic, Avi.
I am.
So, yeah, there was that. So, what did I do? I started the lecture at slide 120, and I thanked everybody for their time and, you know, wished them all good luck. And then I cut off the presentation, at which point the person who was in charge of the tech, the audiovisual specialist, runs into the room and says, "Is there something wrong?" And I said, "No, I was just trying to enliven some of the students." I'm going to take it a step further, though, because now, fast forward, I've gotten the reviews of my lecture. And the brazen responses, where someone could have even put no response whatsoever, are not applicable. People wrote, "I didn't listen to the lecture. I found better uses of my time. She was great." Now, I realize we're in a progressive society. For those of you who don't know what I look like, I don't think I can be confused as somebody who has any kind of gender identity other than man. People didn't look, and they were so... they lacked any sense of any common sense, courtesy, decency, thoughtfulness. And I know it sounds a little bit like I'm off track, but the reality is that these are all ways of learning how to navigate society, right? If I didn't listen to a lecture, I'm not going to say, oh, wow, that was, I didn't listen to that lecture, it was useless, unless I'm hoping to enact some kind of change. Well, the material that I lecture is not something that's actually negotiable outside of the medical school curriculum. So while it could potentially be done differently, it must be education that's provided. So the level of how do I respond appropriately has to do with grit, because guess what? If you got kicked in the teeth as a kid for saying something that was completely brazen and inappropriate, then you probably don't do it as an adult, right? I know we don't talk about the Rasha after the fact, but after his teeth were blunted, we don't hear from him again, do we? And maybe that's because he learned his lesson about how to phrase things in an acceptable way. That would be a measure of grit. So we need to let people learn how to function, and I agree with that 100%. And the converse is, right, I have people who have children, adult children, who are struggling with addiction. And they say, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. And I say, well, stop giving them cash. And they say, but I don't want them to, they'll die. Well, A, God willing, they'll get treatment and they won't die. But also it's a, okay, have a discussion about what rules you're going to set. Right? We forget that we can set rules. You know, don't use drugs under my roof. That's a reasonable rule. I'm not going to support you if you're using drugs. A reasonable rule. Will I support your treatment? Okay, yes, that's important. That's, you know, we can't expect someone to
I may not give you cash, but I'll give you a gift card to the grocery store.
Well, or groceries.
Or groceries.
Sadly, themselves. A lot of ways to use gift cards, apparently. But even, again, I'll support you getting mental health treatment, I'll help you get a job. Another, you know, and we see this a lot of times within also parents who are struggling with kids who run away, right? Well, my kid keeps running away. You let them back in. And I don't mean people with unsafe homes. This is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who have loving, caring environments where they perhaps would choose to leave knowing that they can just come back and there's no consequences. And that's the bigger thing, right? It's not about punish to the extreme, right? The answer is not, well, you chose to leave, so now you have to be homeless. But perhaps the answer is, you chose to leave, and there are consequences to returning. We have rules under our roof. And that is a big measure of something that's important when we're considering grit.
And I imagine we would probably agree it is not the ideal to put a stumbling block in front of your child to create problems for them, but rather help them identify the problems that they are having. I saw a suggestion for bosses that I think could work well with children, which is when somebody comes to you and says they have a problem, you go, great. Think of three ways you can solve it, and then tell me which one you're choosing. And I think that idea of helping people understand that there might be more than one way to solve their problem is important. And two, giving them the power to say, and now you get to choose which way you're going to do it. And therefore, you are empowered with both the choice and you are responsible for the outcome. And if it didn't work, well, in some cases, you can have a do-over, right? I tried to build the table this way. It fell apart. Okay, try building it again a different way. Or, in some cases, there are no do-overs, and you just learn the lesson and rub on the scar a little bit and move on. And I think that both of those are learning moments, are teachable moments, where we can help and support our children by giving them by empowering them with those choices and by supporting them when they make those decisions. And there are times where guidance is appropriate, right? You can choose to do that. Let me tell you what happened when I chose to do something similar. That doesn't mean it'll turn out the same for them. We live in a different time and a different generation. They are different people. And I think we do have to be careful about not putting our own biases onto our children. But at the same time, there's that line between advice and empowering them to make their own choices and their own decisions and supporting them as they do that.
It reminds me of the idea of, you know, you mentioned about sometimes it doesn't go the right way. Well, we have a phrase for that. It's called failing, or a word for that. And the truth is that people are always afraid to fail. We see this all the time. I know both of us do. I'll speak for both of us. The truth is if you think about what you learn potentially from failing, countless things can be learned from failing. What do you learn from getting it right? One thing. How to do that thing. And I think if we start to stop protecting people from failing, we are going to see that people have the capacity to do so much more and learn so much more than we realize. Failing is not to be feared. Failing is to be learned from and embraced. And to know that, yeah, not everything you try is going to work. Because the other thing is that if you think everything you do is gold, then when you find out that what you just turned into your boss was garbage, you're going to have to step up your game. And you're not going to know how to do that if no one's ever told you, hey, maybe put a little effort in next time.
So here's my question for around the Shabbos table. When is a time when you have fabulously failed? And what did you learn from it? And how did it help you grow?
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to reach us, you can reach us at iqdiscuss@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and responding.